Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continues. Heath in for Chuck today. King should be back in the big chair coming up on Monday, but appreciate you making some time to hang out with us. Going to head down to Gainesville, talk a little bit about Florida here coming up in a couple of minutes as they're trying to get in on a pretty important player that it seems like there's a belief maybe they're about to be able to add that would help them out on the offensive line. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a couple of minutes. By the way, there are some other transfer players of note. Remember, the portal remains open for a few more days. Kids don't have to get out of the portal by the end of the deadline, but if you are not in, even a grad transfer, this is a rule change they've made now. If you're a grad transfer and you don't get in by the end of this window next week, then you're not going to be able to play right away next year. So everybody will at least know if a kid is still on your roster by this time next week, he's not going to be able to just suddenly up and bail on you and go play somewhere else in FBS in 2024. He can obviously still choose to transfer and sit or go to junior college or whatever, but at least he won't just out of the blue 2 weeks before the season say, hey, guess what? Somebody found out that there was a real need at a Big Ten school for someone at my position, and, well, I've decided I need to transfer. You're safe from that, at least the beginnings of some idea what your final roster looks like if you're a coach in the next few days. But for what it's worth, a couple of names have gone into the portal that might stand out. Khalil Jacobs, linebacker for South Alabama, into the portal. And you're talking about somebody last year, 56 tackles for South Alabama. But naturally, given the fact that the head coach of South Alabama is now the defensive coordinator at Alabama, there's a lot of people connecting the dots there and saying, would not be surprised if he found his way to Tuscaloosa. As again, it is expected that the Crimson Tide staff is going to add talent here in this next few weeks from the portal to patch some of the things that they lost in that big surge out after Saban's departure. So that being the case, that's at least a name for Alabama people. Keep your eye on. It would make a lot of sense. And at minimum, you know, you don't need to spend a lot of time evaluating. You know, you've got a defensive coordinator who knows what he does, what kind of kid he is. Like, you have every answer you need. So you're either presumably going to offer him right away, or if you don't, then you'll know if you're a Bama fan, this is not somebody you're going after. Also, DJ Waller is a name that is coming up for Kentucky. Quietly, there are some kids jumping in the portal at Michigan that I think are surprising some people. You've had a lineman go in. You've had a guy who was expected to be a starting corner go in. Increasingly, the transition, which you were hoping would be as smooth as possible, hold on to a lot of your talent, that is not necessarily the way that things are going at Michigan. Obviously, you've had some chaos with multiple members of the staff getting involved in DUI situations. Not a great look. And now people kind of wondering, do you have the right answer at quarterback for next year? And some players that you were expecting would be a part of your team looking around. So, again, some questions, I think, about just how rough this transition is going to be for what they were hoping it would be from Harbaugh to Sherrone Moore sticking around. But if you're Kentucky, again, anybody from Youngstown is someone that, as long as Vince Merrow's on Kentucky's staff, they will always be expected to be involved with. And in this case, apparently from the beginning, there's been talk that they might be a heavy contender for him. Reports now that he is going to be visiting. So that might be a kind of high profile name to keep an eye on if you are a Kentucky fan. Adding a player that would have potentially at least been a starter for the national champion would be something that would get your attention. So we will check in here in Florida coming up momentarily. Also, of course, later on in the hour, we will check up with Brad Crawford. Brad Crawford from CBS Sports is a guy who I think does some interesting writing on the national level, and Crawford scheduled to join us to talk about a piece he wrote recently about coaches that are facing a challenge, basically a big year for them. Not necessarily hot seat guys. There's a difference between the two. You aren't necessarily on the hot seat, for example, if you're Shane Beamer yet. But what you can't have if you're Shane Beamer is a second year where you're not bowling. If you have, with a tough schedule, a year where people look at it and they say, all right, well, I wish you'd won more games, but I still see you're adding talent. You've added some pretty quality kids. You had a young quarterback, and now you're going to build off of that with him as a redshirt freshman. Now you've got another couple of years that you're going to continue to grow your offense around him. You can have a quiet year record-wise, but not be doing something that causes people to turn their back on your program and start to believe that it's going in the wrong direction. But if you have a 4-8 year after you missed last year a bowl game too with a quarterback who is about going to be drafted, we don't know when Spencer Rattler will be drafted, but a quarterback who is going to be drafted, when that happens, if you have something like that play out that way, then I think you put yourself in a position where now year five, everything's on the table. Now people are saying, okay, you must win, and you must do more than get to 6-6. You've got to give us something to be excited about. Now you've got to find a way to win like 8 in a very difficult conference to find a way to win 8 if you are South Carolina right now. So that's one of his examples. There are more of guys that just need to find a way to give themselves a year to where they don't find their way near the proverbial hot seat. So we'll talk to Brad Crawford about that coming up. Okay, we're supposed to be joined by Nick Della Torre here. Have not obviously been able to connect with Nick as of yet. So if we don't, then what we might try and do is get him in the next segment. So, David, tell me what we're doing here. Okay, we're still in limbo. Okay, so let's go ahead and plan for that then. We'll see if we can't move it on and reschedule Nick if we can in the next window of time. And we'll just do for this what I would have done in the next window of time. One thing from last night with the NFL draft, we saw last night the Nick Saban debut as an official member of ESPN's team for College Game Day. Now, there's multiple platforms ESPN does stuff on, so you might not have been watching the one that had Saban. If you were watching over-the-air ESPN, that was the broadcast Saban was on. If you just watched ESPN, I'm sure they showed him at some point, but he was featured on the other broadcast. I think it was really interesting to watch him last night. Obviously, he has fantastic insights into the players that he has coached against, that he has tried to recruit. You knew he would have good information. We have seen Nick Saban do TV before and do it well, which is why I think a lot of people expect huge things from him as a member of the Game Day team this year. But what we've not typically seen Saban have to do is do hours and hours and hours of TV. It's one thing to come out and do a segment or a couple of segments with Game Day at the national championship game, or to do an interview before you have a game later that day. Saban has always been fantastically polished in those situations, and the expectations are that he will continue to be that way. But last night, as the night went on, and you're Saban and you've been sitting out there on a TV set now for 4 hours, 4.5 hours. You could tell by the end of the night, it's kind of like, okay, seriously, we don't have to laugh at everything somebody says. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you just tell. He started to get a little chapped at the end of the night. And he didn't snap on anybody. He didn't get contentious with his coworkers. But you could just kind of tell it was wearing on him a little bit. Even when he had good things to say, then, like, he would say something and then there'd be that, ah, ha, 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 because everybody has to fake laugh on TV for whatever reason. And you could tell he's kind of looking around like, what are we doing here? That wasn't funny. Why are we laughing about that? But overall, I thought it was a good debut. I will be interested in seeing, as things continue, how they use him, because the more you can get him to get into specifics of players, and the more you can integrate him into your team, because that was one thing that also stood out last night. There were some times where, and I don't know if this is Herb Street doing it on his own or whether it's a producer in Herb Street's ear saying, hey, he's talking too football-y. We're on ABC. there's a lot of people who aren't going to understand him when he says speed to power. So can you get Coach to translate the football language into something that someone who's turning in saying, who are these people and where's Grey's Anatomy, that they will understand? I don't know which of those two things was happening. But they need to have Saban, as this goes on, become one of the guys. Not have it be like they're kind of genuflecting to him because he's the great Nick Saban. Not have him have to be kind of rich. Okay, Coach, need you to break it down for your average person. If someone's watching College Game Day, again, I get it last night. It's ABC. That's a little different. If someone's watching College Game Day, you don't need to break everything down for them. You can use some football-y terms and just let it go. I hope that producers will not stop Saban from being natural and talking because they're afraid that he's going to use jargon that might somehow repel an audience member. If somebody is choosing to watch Nick Saban talk on game day, they can handle if once in a while he says something like a red dog and doesn't define what a red dog is right that moment, it'll be fine. So I hope they're not going to do too much of that. I felt like last night there was some of that. But again, the ABC thing may have explained why. Bill Belichick, meanwhile, also was on last night with Pat McAfee on his show, which I believe was only on YouTube. And there's some great clips and insights from Belichick available. Again, if Belichick wants to do broadcasting and is committed to doing broadcasting, he'll be great at it. It's just a question of how committed is he to doing it, especially right now where he clearly still wants to coach. How much, if at all, will he pull punches during the regular season? It's one thing to, during the draft, say, for example, about a Drake May, you know, here's the things I like, but I don't like his footwork, and here's the problems. It's one thing to say that during the draft. During the regular season, when Belichick might be at least thinking about, do I want to work for this owner or, you know, this team, whatever it might be, that I'm criticizing might be somebody that that holds a grudge somehow. We saw that with John Gruden. We saw Gruden. If you watch John Gruden on TV, everybody was great. Quarterbacks are great. Coaches are great. Owners are great. Everybody's great. It was very clear that he was looking to make sure he was not offending somebody. I hope, if Bill Belichick is going to keep doing TV, as it's been reported he likely will in some capacity, I hope we get unfiltered Belichick. I don't know if we will, but last night, if you find some of the clips, it's really interesting stuff. You won't see him much on college, I imagine, so we probably won't be discussing Belichick the way we probably will be what Saban does. But I would say, if you're interested in football, it's definitely worth finding some of what Belichick shared last night. But for Saban, for the debut, good debut. Just want to smooth off some edges there. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show. Hopefully we'll have some Florida conversation on the other side. Keep it right here.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today, and obviously not able to connect with our Florida guest that was scheduled. So we'll just tell you that it looks like, at least, Florida may be in line to add a center who was touted as the number one offensive line prospect last year. This is Jason Zandamela, a guy who originally went to the Trojans, went out there, and for whatever reason, just after one semester, decided it was time to come back closer to home. And so UCF was the first place that really got mentioned for him. And we talked about that's an example of a program that probably could not have gotten into the conversation before they joined the Big 12. But they are having some success in the portal, and I think they're going to really take advantage of those opportunities. But for what it's worth, multiple outlets yesterday going with predictions indicating that they believe that now Zandamela is going to wind up becoming a member of Florida. He's going on a visit this weekend, so it's not official yet. But I guess the thought from those who follow recruiting is that if things go the way that they are supposed to, then Florida will likely secure a commitment from him. So if you are Billy Napier, you'd be adding somebody here to your offensive line that was considered a top prospect last year and that would have been a part of your class that you signed back in December or February. You have another freshman who was one of the most touted linemen in the country coming in unexpectedly. That is a big bonus. Florida just had a scholarship spot clear earlier this week, and you're replacing a guy who was recruited by the Mullen staff and who had been around for a few years but had not really been an on-field contributor, had some injury issues and whatnot. He announced that he was stepping away from on-field football. So you're taking a guy who, had he played in 2024, very hard to imagine that he would have been a significant contributor, and replacing him with a guy who, I don't know whether or not Zenimela can get on the field and contribute immediately for Florida this year or not, but who at minimum could be the cornerstone of a new offensive line. So you've got your young quarterback in Lagway, and now you've got the guy who, at least if he comes close to living up to the potential people see for him, the guy who could be the person snapping the ball to Lagway for his run at Florida. So that's a nice pickup for a staff that needs positive things right now. Billy Napier is a staff that we'll be talking about in 10 minutes with Brad Crawford. One of the staffs that goes into this year, if not on the hot seat for sure, definitely feeling pressure to show progress, show growth, and try and reduce the stress level going towards 2025. I think you could argue Napier is actually on the hot seat already. As if you have listened to the show, you may know I am a Florida alum. I do not root for the University of Florida's football team, but I am an alum. And there are a bunch of my friends, obviously, as an alum, that I hear from about the Florida football team, including my wife. Let's just say that none of them right now are sold on the idea that Billy Napier is going to figure it out. So if he throws up another year that is disappointing, a fan base that has shown that they will turn on coaches and turn on them in a hurry, and I don't know that Napier ever had to begin with. That's the thing. As a guy like a Will Muschamp, when he came in, fans were at least open-minded about Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp hadn't failed yet as a head coach. So I was like, okay, we got this guy who's this hot young coach. He's going to fix the defense up and make them amazing, and things are going to be great. It wasn't until after some things happened, like the Charlie Weiss offensive coordinator hire and whatnot, that people started saying, I don't know about this guy. But at the beginning, he started fresh. Napier never really, I think, from the beginning, had everybody behind him. And then some things have happened since that have reduced the people that were open-minded. So this at least could be a nice pickup for them if it plays out the way it's supposed to. Meanwhile, a coach also making transition into year two is Jeff Brohm. And we have seen at Louisville something a little unusual. It's not as unusual as it would have been in the past, but we've seen something a little unusual happening at Louisville this year. Multiple kids have come in, spent one semester there, and then are transferring again. The one who's made the most noise is the kid who was the running back, who was the MAC player of the year last year, and who evidently did not like the fact that he had been told he might be a backup at Louisville, jumped back into the portal, and at the moment, I think the expectation is he's going to wind up at Kentucky, so that'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. But you've had several kids at Louisville come in for a semester and then move again. Yesterday, there's a report in Louisville by Drew Diener, who's been a radio host up there for a long time, that indicated that apparently there was a group of players that were represented by one particular agent, and that Brohm, at least according to this report, found out that there were some issues going on that he did not care for and basically said, hit the bricks. We'll see whether or not that is how things played out, whether or not further reporting can kind of fill in the blanks on this a little bit. But it would help at least potentially explain what that trend has been of some guys that you don't expect a large number of people to come somewhere and only be there for a semester. It is legal now, but you still don't expect it to be a thing you'd want to do. Because, I mean, my goodness, you've probably moved at some point in your life. Do you want to move again if you move? Like, I hate moving. The only good thing about moving is that it does force you to go through some of your stuff and get rid of some things and get a little leaner. And so maybe the next time you move, it's if you move more quickly, I guess a little lighter because you already got rid of some stuff. But man, you just don't want to move. Having to change every address, every different thing. You don't have any idea how many addresses you have on file with things until you have to move. You got to get the new driver's license. You got to get everything switched over, your insurance, all of it. No one likes to move. So the idea that people, you're a younger kid, it's a little easier, but you got to make friends. You got to learn where anything is. Where's the place you can get a decent sandwich? Where's the place that you can go and actually unwind? You got to learn all this stuff. You're not going to want to do that every 4 to 6 months. It's just nobody's idea of a good time. And so to have that number of people do that, it got your attention. And so now it's like, okay, maybe this is filling in the blanks at least a little bit on what happened there. I also wonder, will we see, because again, the report indicated that there was a specific agent whose players were the issue here. Is that going to become a thing? If you follow, for example, Major League Baseball, there are some teams that do not deal with Scott Boras. Boras is probably the number one agent in the sport. As far as I know, at least at the moment, that's still his title, although he didn't have a great year this year. But as far as I know, that's still his title. But there are some teams that just say, we're not dealing with it. We know what it's like to have one of his clients, and they may be good people in the clubhouse, and they may be good performers on the field, but having a guy who's always only focused on what's going to make his clients the most money, who'll never do a deal before they hit the open market, causes uncertainty, wants to drag things out for months, wants to try and do PR spin against us. We just don't need it. We're not dealing with his clients. We're not going to deal with this guy. I wonder if you'll see some teams, if there are the college football version of Scott Boras that start to be kind of the known NIL agents for certain programs or certain cities or regions or whatever. I wonder if you will see some programs say, we're not dealing with that guy. He might have a good player. It's not worth it to us to have to deal with that guy. That doesn't sound like something you'd expect in college football, but it wouldn't shock me a bit.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
A lifetime of hard work, children laughing in the kitchen, family photos on a restaurant wall, a legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Show Heath Klein in for Chuck today, and of course keeping on everything going on in college football. And while we've talked a lot about different things tied into the draft, you've got obviously everything from the trends about the SEC continuing to transfer players and whether or not transfer players seem to be helping or hurting themselves with the draft. So a lot of things going on. But, oh, yeah, there is still college football, just plain old college football. No ties into anything. So he said, let's do a little bit of that today. Let's make sure we check in on things with college football for 2024 on the field. Brad Crawford joins us right now. He is with CBS Sports and 24/7 Sports and wrote a piece this week that I thought was interesting. He joins us now in the Chuck Oliver Show. Brad, how are you?
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it. And looking forward to day two of the draft here and getting into some college football content.
No doubt. The piece you wrote, every year there's a hot seat piece. Everybody writes them, and frequently the names, you could probably guess a lot of them right away. What I liked about what you wrote was that you weren't really taking the angle of a hot seat as much as it was kind of, hey, these are some guys that this is an important year for them. These are some guys where you're not necessarily on the hot seat yet, but if this year doesn't go the way you need to, you can see it from here.
Right, and a couple of these guys are obviously coaching for their jobs, like Florida's Billy Napier and Arkansas coach Sam Pittman, but there's others that are still in the infancy of their tenures, like Deion Sanders out west at Colorado, Shane Beamer at South Carolina, among others, that really just need some forward momentum. You know, you look at Shane Beamer in Columbia 2 years ago, was able to knock off a top 10 Tennessee and Clemson back-to-back weeks, and the Gamecocks are 0-5 against ranked teams since that stretch, missed a bowl game last season, obviously lost Spencer Rattler, lost a first-round pick last night, and Xavier Leggett, and really have a transfer portal-infused roster against a very difficult schedule. And this is year four for Shane Beamer. So, you know, he's a guy that I think could enter that hot seat talk going into 2025 if he doesn't do well this season. And then Deion Sanders, man, the spring transfer portal has not been kind to the Buffaloes.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Yeah, the thing to me about a guy like a Shane Beamer, for example, is it's not just about wins and losses. It's about how you look along the way. I think Billy Napier is another example of this. Florida losing last year to Utah in Salt Lake City, that's not something that on its face you say, well, that's just ridiculous. But they looked incredibly poorly prepared, Brad. They looked like they hadn't practiced. It was embarrassing how they looked, not just the outcome. And that, to me, for some of these guys, is just as important. Yes, it would probably be a really good idea for Shane Beamer to get back to a bowl this year after missing last year. But he needs to have an offense, for example, when he made a hire that the fans were kind of lukewarm on. If with a young quarterback in year two, you know, you see growth from Harbor, you see Sellers come out and look really sharp with a year training in that offense, that's different than if it's still just kind of sloppy, kind of struggling. I think that how you get to a 6-win season matters just as much as whether you get there, frankly.
Sure, especially when you signed a top 20 recruiting class. You got two cornerstone tackles, that one's a 5-star, another's a 4-star, Josiah Thompson, some guys there. And you mentioned Lenore Sellers. I mean, behind him, this quarterback room is one of the thinnest in the SEC. You got Robbie Ashford, the Auburn transfer, a true freshman, and Dante Reno. And then you got Luke Doty, who has played wide receiver the last 2 years, is pretty much the emergency option. So it's a vital year for Shane Beamer, like you said, to look better on offense. This is Dow Loggins' second year as the play caller. And then getting back to your point on Billy Napier, I do think he needs a winning season to stay employed in Gainesville. You know, he's going to face, I think, 11 Power 5 conference opponents, opening with Miami, closing against Florida State, and then you've got all those ranked opponents in the SEC in between there. So Graham Mertz is back, 5-star quarterback, DJ Lagway's behind him. So, you know, the leash is perhaps longer than some might expect in Gainesville, but I tell you what, if Florida goes 4-8 or 5-7 again, that's probably a wrap on Napier's tenure.
But that's, again, though, an example of a guy where I think how you get there matters, too, because of Lagway. I think Lagway is the one chip he's got to play. If the perception is if you fire Napier, you're going to lose Lagway, too, you might have some people that will grin and bear it if they see a Florida team that did at least beat Miami earlier in the year, that did not lose to a UCF, for example, that is not supposed to beat Florida, period. It's one thing to do it in a bowl game where the team was already checked out on the year. In season, Florida people will not accept losing to UCF, period. That is never going to be acceptable under any circumstances. If he loses those kind of games, he's cooked unless he somehow makes up for them during that final brutal 5 games. But people understand those 5 games and what they are. If you're losing those games, but you're seeing growth, you're seeing competition, he might be able to squeeze one more year to see what he could do with Lagway, but he cannot lose those Miami and UCF games and even have a chance, I would argue, maybe of even getting to the end of the year. I think the mood will get that ugly if he does.
I think you're exactly right. And then depending on who's available next coaching cycle, we've seen some, you know, high-level boosters and athletic departments in recent years pretty much get rid of their coach because they know there's another big fish they could want. So there's other SEC coaches who I know want the Florida job, and it's been rumored that it may come open this cycle. So that's certainly something to watch. And I think, you know, moving over to Arkansas and Sam Pittman, this Bobby Petrino hire as his new OC and letting K.J. Jefferson walk to UCF and getting Taylen Green from Boise State to be the new transfer starting quarterback, it's sort of a last-ditch effort, in my opinion, to get things right in Fayetteville. I mean, this team finished with 9 wins a couple years ago and just really has not found anything since. They've struggled up front, which is supposed to be Sam Pittman's, you know, specialty, being a former offensive line coach at Georgia. So Sam Pittman and Billy Napier are two SEC coaches that I'm certainly keeping a very close eye on.
Brad Crawford with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show, taking a look at PC did earlier this week. And again, one of the names that was in there, Matt Rhule. And you're not saying Matt Rhule's on the hot seat. That's not sure what we're talking about here. But having said that, year one, they still don't make a bowl. I don't know that people know this, and they should. Nebraska, out of all the Power 5 programs, has the longest time away from a bowl. Not Vanderbilt, not whatever bad team you think of when you think of bad teams. Nebraska has the longest period away from making a bowl game. That's ridiculous. They may never get back to what they once were, but there's no reason they shouldn't be able to grind out 6 wins and get to a bowl. And when you've chosen to have a coordinator that lots of people have questions about in Satterfield, if you don't get to a bowl this year, if you don't show growth, then yeah, at that point, I think some people in Lincoln are going to already start to say, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah, no doubt, especially when Nebraska's NIL collective has, you know, forked out millions of dollars to make sure this roster is not only competitive in the Big Ten, but, you know, could potentially get to 7 or 8 wins. 5-star quarterback, flipping him, Dylan Raiola from, you know, he's committed to Georgia and one of the top players in the country. And he may not start this season, but he's the future of the program. And, you know, you look at Matt Rhule's second schedule, he's not going to play a top 25 opponent until late October when Nebraska goes to Ohio State. So we're talking about probably 8 or so games where Nebraska really should be a favorite in probably 7 of the first 8 games. And you have to take advantage of that if you're a head coach. You know, wins don't grow on trees in college football. And some schedules, some years are more favorable than others. This is one of those positive years for Nebraska. So I think if Matt Rhule can maybe get to a, you know, 5-3 or 6-2 start and get to a bowl game, that's certainly a positive step in the right direction for the Huskers. And I think Matt Rhule, you know, we'll start winning sooner rather than later out in Lincoln.
With regards to Deion Sanders in Colorado, I said from the beginning it was worth them trying because that program was completely dead. I mean, it was below the earth. It wasn't just dead. It was well buried. So you're trying a moonshot. If nothing else, you have increased the level of visibility and I guess maybe quote-unquote coolness factor of Colorado football from what it was. You also successfully got to the Big 12, and I am not 100% sure there would have been a lifeboat for Colorado if their football program was as horrid as it was before Deion showed up. So that might have saved the day long term for somebody else to come in and try and fix this. I don't know. But, I mean, Brad, I have always believed it was going to be 3 years at most, and then he was either going to get a job he wanted and get out of there, or it was just going to end in a very bad way. And Obviously right now, the trend is looking towards choice two. I'm curious, as you talk to other people around the sport, he's from the very beginning been doing things unorthodox. A coach having not made a home visit in the entire time he's been at a program is beyond comprehension in 2024. Do people think that this is all some kind of basically pump and dump, just couple years, get some hype, and then get out of there, whether it's for the NFL or whether it was just, hey, I got to coach my kids for 2 years? Do they think still in college football there is any kind of plan here?
You know, I think Coach Prime really tried to follow the pump and dump roster mentality that has worked out the last couple of years at Ole Miss and Florida State, talking about two top 15 programs who pretty much have revamped and completely flipped their roster each of the last two cycles through the portal. Well, Coach Prime tried to do that. You know, he signed 7 offensive linemen in the portal in January alone, and now here at the end of spring, 6 of those guys have already re-entered the portal and left the program. He did sign Jordan Seaton, a 5-star lineman, and he's going to stick. He's a freshman. But, I mean, Colorado has to get better up front. Gave up more sacks than any power conference team in the nation last fall. You got Shedeur Sanders, probably a top-5 pick in the 2025 NFL draft. But the window to win right now, I mean, it's here for Deion Sanders. But this is a completely new-look roster. I think losing Cormani McClain, the former 5-star corner to the portal this week, was a big hit. Losing Dylan Edwards, a freshman running back last fall that had 4 touchdowns in that win over TCU, losing him to maybe Ole Miss, maybe Kansas State. So Deion's having some camaraderie issues, I think, inside the locker room. It's sort of a me program right now. A lot of handouts, a lot of NIL stuff being written. So it's going to be a very interesting year out in Boulder. And like you said, I think it's trending toward another 4-8 type 5-7 finish. And if that offensive line can't block for Shador, man, it's going to be a long year offensively.
And that's where you started to say last year, hey, I don't know about all this, when he decided to demote Sean Lewis, who everybody agreed had done a fantastic job with not a great hand of cards to work with there, and you demote him and you say you want to go to a pro-style offense when you don't have anything close to talent to run pro-style offense, you just kind of shake your head and say, what are you doing?
And they had a bunch of scat backs, too. You know, they have guys that, While talented in the backfield, they aren't these bruising three-down players if you're going to run a pro-style balance set. And we saw that out in the Pac-12 when they played six or seven straight ranked opponents and lost all those games, and probably going to see it in the Big 12 too. I mean, Arizona's coming in. They're a top 15 program. Utah's there. Kansas, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and Colorado plays all of those schools, a lot of them on the road. So it's probably another five-win type season for Colorado, but a step in the right direction must be made in the trenches, and I don't think Colorado is done quite yet, you know, trying to add talent there before August.
They better not be. Last couple of minutes here with Brad Crawford from 24/7 Sports, CBS. Brad, with regards to Edwards, you mentioned him. Right now, he's mentioned with Ole Miss. Does Lane intend to sign every running back in America and just have the biggest depth chart ever? I mean, they got the kid out of New Mexico. How many running backs can he add?
Yeah, he got Logan Diggs from LSU, too, the former Notre Dame running back. If they do sign, the Rebels, that is, sign Dylan Edwards, then I think he's going to play a lot of slot receiver along with Juice Wells, the guy they got from South Carolina. So, look, it's a portal-infused roster. I think Kansas State is still the favorite there. Dylan Edwards' dad played there. Dylan Edwards was once committed to Kansas State, you know, before signing out with Coach Prime. So I think it's a two-horse race. Miami might enter it too. But, yeah, like you said, Ole Miss is just trying to load up on as many speedy, talented, fast guys they can on both sides of the ball. And this is going to be, regardless of if they get Dylan Edwards or not, the best-looking roster on paper they've ever had in Oxford. So I think Ole Miss is a legitimate playoff contender based on what Kiffin's done in the portal this spring.
Yeah, this is what is going to be fascinating this year is to see, because we've seen them and we've certainly seen, I think, Missouri both as programs that are historically not expected to be the programs we're talking about if you're talking about SEC contenders on the national level. And both of them clearly feel like this is a year where, with the expanded playoff, even if you can't make Atlanta, you could still do something historic for your program. And they are governing themselves accordingly. And I wonder, is this going to be the trend over the next few years? Is, you know, this is the year that we'll just say, you know, a South Carolina or a Kentucky or whoever, one of these programs that is not a habitual expectation to get to Atlanta, they just pick their year and kind of say, all right, this year, all the chips in the center of the table, we're going to find a way to get to the playoff, because it sure looks like that's what those two programs are doing.
That's exactly what Ole Miss is doing. They were able to convince Jackson Dart to come back. They got Trey Harris and Jordan Watkins at wide out. And then, you know, both games, regular season games, Ole Miss lost last season at Bama, at Georgia. You could see the difference in talent at the line of scrimmage. Well, Lane Kiffin went in the portal and you know, got Walter Nolan from A&M, a former five-star guy. He got the star linebacker from Florida, Princely, who's had an amazing spring. So Ole Miss got better in terms of strength at the line of scrimmage and on defense, and that's usually been the weakness these last few years. But this is a team that I think undoubtedly is going to benefit from playoff expansion, and there's other teams in the SEC that will too, like LSU and Georgia, Texas. So this is a four probably bid league in the SEC this season for the playoff, and you know Alabama's going to always be in that mix too.
Yeah, Brad Crawford, check him out. BCrawford247 if you are doing the Twitter thing, and check his workout, 24/7 Sports and CBS. Brad, appreciate you making some time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thanks a bunch, man.
There you go. Brad Crawford on the Dunkin' Donuts Newsmaker line here on the Chuck Oliver Show today. Hey, we will come back, put the wraps on what has been a busy week right after this.
Now back back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I'm thrilled for Michael Penix. It is, I just wonder what was going on in that draft room and what impressed them so much. What individual, you know, fundamental or yeah. you know, quality about his personality impressed them to make this pick with a quarterback that's already there to save the day.
Chuck Oliver Show. That, of course, the voice of Rick Neuheisel speaking for a lot of people last night trying to figure out where things go. This is the one thing I do hate for kids that get drafted. You want for anybody who is selected in the NFL draft, that's one of the signature moments you're going to have of your life. You might go on to be an amazing player, but you'll still, even as you head into the Hall of Fame, they'll probably be showing the clip. Hey, remember when he got drafted? Tom Brady, all these years later, that clip of him kind of slouchy looking at the combine, and there he is at pick 199. It's still a regular part of his story. So you always want for somebody when they are drafted for it to be a moment that they can feel good about. So I always hated that when, you know, the New York Jets crowd or whatever would boo a pick, and it would be somebody, maybe they didn't even know who the guy was, but they were reacting because it wasn't the name they expected, so they reacted negatively. And now go back, you know, Donovan McNabb, there are a bunch of Eagles fans booing Donovan McNabb, the best quarterbacks they've ever had, guy would get him to a Super Bowl, but when he's drafted, they boo the guy. I've always hated that, and it's not Michael Penix's fault in any way. But out of all the moves made last night by NFL teams, there's no question that the Falcons choosing to draft Penix after they had already invested heavily financially in Kirk Cousins was definitely the eyebrow raiser of the night. And so if you're Penix, I mean, here you are. You've had this amazing accomplishment. You've gone from being a guy who originally, remember, once upon a time, Tennessee didn't hold on to as a commitment. Said, nah, we don't think you're all that good, frankly. We don't want you. You wind up at Indiana. You actually achieve things at Indiana. Then the offensive coordinator who helped you do it leaves, and things go sideways. Then you also along the way have multiple ACL injuries. But you reunite with your former coordinator as head coach in Washington, and you make it to the national championship game. And now here you are, a guy that even a month or two ago was projected by some people as second or third round pick. Here you are. You're a top 10 pick with all the obstacles you've overcome. Like, that should be this great moment. And instead, it wasn't booze, but the immediate reaction from everyone who covers football was, what? That doesn't make any sense. And to be blunt, it doesn't. But it's not his fault. It could have been any quarterback. If it had been J.J. McCarthy, the reaction would have been just the same. It's just, for that team to take a player at that position at that moment was completely baffling. I just feel bad for him that's going to be a part of the story of his draft. One of the other things that, of course, is always a popular story of the draft is the guy who doesn't go where he thinks he should go. And so you know there are some guys tonight that are sitting there saying, I should have been called yesterday. I'm going to remember this. This is going to motivate me. I am going to hold it against the teams that did not draft me, that could have drafted me, that talked to me, and I thought maybe they were going to be the team, and they didn't take me. I'm going to use that to motivate me for years. You know there will be some of those tonight, but hopefully for them, they could turn into a positive when they finally are called. I felt bad for Penix with that last night. That's what matters to me. That's brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. Make sure you check them out. Again, we expect to have Chuck back in studio next week, and so I'm sure he'll have thoughts to weigh in on whatever happened the rest of the week with the draft and what it might say about certain programs, certain kids. Again, plenty of guys that you're very familiar with that are going to go over the Friday nights and into Saturday over the next few days. I'll be real curious to see where a guy like Spencer Rattler lands, given how many teams wanted quarterbacks so badly. You know, Chuck was saying he wasn't sure if he was going to go before the fourth round. He might go second round tonight if there's anybody who still needs a quarterback. You know, receivers aplenty, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, where will those guys go? And will some of them have bigger careers than guys that went ahead of them in the first round? It is what makes the draft a fun time. even though this is a college show, finding out where the guys you followed through their college careers are going to wind up. So I will certainly be intrigued by that as well. We'll talk about it all here on the program, as well as looking at what's going on with the portal and more. That's next week. For today, thanks to David Holloway for producing. Thanks to you for listening. We will see you on Monday.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right, which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.